This is Brother Peter Diamond, VaticanCatholic.com. I was going to be doing a series on certain encyclicals and documents of the Magisterium because I think one of the biggest problems we have today is a general lack of familiarity with solid Catholic principles. And when people delve into exactly what the Magisterium, the dogmas, the popes teach, the true conclusions concerning Vatican II and other heresies that abound today become that much more clear. And so I want to talk specifically about the encyclical Mirari Vos of Pope Gregory XVI. This encyclical was promulgated August 15, 1832, and it's on liberalism and religious indifferentism. And I want to cover some of the most interesting parts of this encyclical and how they contrast with the Vatican II apostasy and other heresies we see today. And I think when people look at the contrast, only one conclusion follows. And so, jumping right in, I want to first start in Mirari Vos, Pope Gregory XVI's encyclical number 6, and I want to say that Pope Gregory XVI is one of the strongest popes, in my opinion, in the last few hundred years. He pulls no punches coming out against the heretics. He has some of the most memorable quotes denouncing evils that you will find of any pope. And in number 6, under the section Evils Must Be Deplored, Gregory XVI says that we must raise our voice and attempt all things, lest a wild boar from the woods should destroy the vineyard or wolves kill the flock. End quote. And so he's saying that he must come out and denounce these heresies because otherwise the flock might perish. And moving to number 7, he speaks about how a Catholic is to adhere to dogma. And this is a quote that I cited in my book, Outside the Catholic Church, There is Absolutely No Salvation, in the section dealing with how to understand Catholic dogma. And he cites Pope Agatho. Okay, so Gregory says, the admonition of Pope Agatho, nothing of the things appointed ought to be diminished, nothing changed, nothing added, but they must be preserved both as regards expression and meaning, end quote. That's very interesting because he's saying that the very expression of Catholic doctrine, okay, is critical. Just like Vatican I said, we must believe dogma as it is once declared. It's not a development. We don't understand dogmatic pronouncements by fallible sources. We understand other things by the expressions of the dogmatic pronouncement. And another translation would say, they must be preserved both as regards word and meaning. So the actual declarations of the words of the dogma are critical. That destroys modernistic novelties. I won't be able to cover every interesting quote in this encyclical, but I will move as fast as I can. Jumping forward to point number 10, speaking of the church and papal authority, Gregory XVI says, therefore, it is obviously absurd and injurious to propose a certain restoration and regeneration for the church, as though necessary for her safety and growth, as if she could be considered subject to defect or obscuration or other misfortune. End quote. And he says this right after speaking about how the church is inspired by the Holy Spirit. And so he's denouncing the false idea that the church needs a restoration or a regeneration. And this is actually an error of expression that many traditionalists use. They say we need the restoration of the church. That's actually not correct, as we see here. The church doesn't need to be restored because as long as it exists, even if it's reduced to a remnant, it doesn't require restoration. The concept of a restoration of the church itself implies that the church has an inherent defect. And this is also interesting because we see it contrasted with the heretical teaching of Vatican II. In Unitatis Redentia Gratia number 6, Vatican II's heretical decree on ecumenism, it says this, Christ summons the church to continual reformation, of which it is always in need, insofar as it is an institution of human beings here on earth. End quote. So it says the church constantly needs reformation, whereas Gregory XVI denounces that idea because he says it implies that the church has a defect. and of course Vatican II and the anti-popes which followed it, frequently spoke of the sins of the church, the defects of the church, etc. So this heretical teaching of Vatican II is in conformity with the modernist idea that the church is defective. And Vatican II also teaches that the church is insufficient as a means of salvation in ad gentes. Moving on to perhaps the most important quote in this encyclical, it comes in section number 13. Again, we're talking about Pope Gregory XVI, Mirari Vos. He's condemning indifferentism and the idea of salvation outside the church. And he says, "Now we must consider another abundant source of the evils with which the church is afflicted at present, indifferentism. This perverse opinion is spread on all sides by the fraud of the wicked, who claim that it is possible to obtain the eternal salvation of the soul by the profession of any kind of religion, as long as morality is maintained. Surely in so clear a matter you will drive this deadly error far from the people committed to your care, with the admonition of the apostle that there is one God, one faith, one baptism. May those fear who contrive the notion that the safe harbor of salvation is open to persons of any religion whatever. They should consider the testimony of Christ himself, that those who are not with Christ are against him, and that they disperse unhappily who do not gather with him. Therefore, without a doubt, they will perish forever, unless they hold the Catholic faith whole and inviolate." End quote. Now, there are some very interesting things to discuss here. He condemns the idea that souls can be saved in any kind of religion as long as morality is maintained. At first reading, someone may say, well, that's just condemning the idea that everyone is saved, a universalism, so to speak. No, it's not, because he goes on to affirm that you must hold without a doubt that whoever does not have the Catholic faith will perish. And he also says that those who do not gather with Christ will be dispersed unhappily or be lost. And so it's not just for those who reject him, as the modernists say, but if you are not incorporated into Christ and his church, you are lost. Furthermore, we see again, as we've pointed out in our debates, that there's only one baptism, that the magisterium has not taught that there is salvation without baptism. It teaches one baptism over and over again, and that one baptism is of water, and we see it again in this encyclical, and he doesn't mention any exceptions. Additionally, it's important to consider that when he condemns the heresy, which holds that souls can be saved in any kind of religion as long as morality is maintained, he's condemning any idea that there can be any salvation outside the church whatsoever. Here's why. If someone, for instance, believes that a few Muslims can be saved, well, obviously that person cannot logically limit the possibility of salvation without the Catholic faith to those Muslims. He would have to admit that if a few Muslims can be saved, well, then a few Buddhists might be able to be saved, or a few Jews, okay? Because once you break down the barrier of Catholic teaching, which declares no salvation without the actual Catholic faith, there is no barrier, and you have no criteria by which you can reasonably and justifiably limit it to those few Muslims. So once you admit any salvation for any soul in any other religion, you are therefore open to the idea of salvation in any religion whatsoever. Once you say a few Muslims, you must say that it's possible for also a few Jews, also a few Buddhists, also a few animists, etc. And that is precisely the wicked heresy, and Gregory XVI calls it wicked, and he calls the people who spread it wicked. That is the wicked heresy held by almost everyone who believes in baptism of desire today. And actually everyone, because even those who don't believe that support people who do. This papal teaching, of course, also contradicts Vatican II and the teaching of the Vatican II antipopes. For instance, in his encyclical Redemptoris Missio, 1990, antipope John Paul II teaches that false religions are, quote, spiritual riches through which God makes himself present to other people. And he also says in the encyclical in number 10 that, quote, the universality of salvation means that it is granted not only to those who explicitly believe in Christ and have entered the church, end quote. That is directly contrary to what we just quoted from Mirari Vos. Now, moving on, in the same paragraph, he continues, and again, this is paragraph 13 of Pope Gregory XVI's Mirari Vos, August 15, 1832. And he's speaking of subjection to the See of Peter, and he says, quote, a schismatic flatters himself falsely if he asserts that he too has been washed in the waters of regeneration. Indeed, Augustine would reply to such a man, "The branch has the same form when it has been cut off from the vine, but of what profit for it is the form if it does not live from the root?" End quote. And so he's confirming again that the schismatics are outside the church, and that they flatter themselves if they assert that they have been washed in the waters of regeneration. This is interesting because one heretic who recently backed out of a debate we were going to do with him tried to refute some of the things we are saying by saying, well, schismatics and heretics have valid baptisms. He was referring to Protestants and Eastern, quote, Orthodox. He didn't call them heretics and schismatics. And he says, well, their valid baptisms give them some kind of union or standing in the church. He was saying this to try to justify Vatican II's heresy. And that, of course, is again directly contrary to what we read here. It doesn't matter if they were washed validly in baptism as infants. If they're schismatics, they're cut off. They're outside. Furthermore, if they approach baptism as an adult, as a heretic, or a schismatic, they actually do not receive regeneration. They receive the character of the sacrament of baptism, but do not receive justification, because their heresy is an impediment to the grace which the sacrament of baptism brings. I can't really get into that here, but this is just another example of how contrary to the traditional faith, the teaching of the magisterium, are the Vatican II novelties and the heretics who try to defend them. They're just refuted at every turn, almost every paragraph. Now, moving to one of the most interesting parts of this encyclical, his section on liberty of conscience. And as we've pointed out, Pope after Pope condemns the heresy of religious liberty, as it is taught by Vatican II, and this is just another example. Gregory XVI focuses primarily on liberty of conscience, of worship, and of the press, okay? And in number 14 he says, "This shameful font of indifferentism gives rise to that absurd and erroneous proposition which claims that liberty of conscience must be maintained for everyone. It spreads ruin," he says. And this liberty of conscience and false ideas about it, of course, ties into Vatican II's heretical teaching on religious liberty. What's interesting is that he says that the indifferentism he just condemned, salvation outside the church, gives rise to liberty of conscience. That makes sense because it was the denial of the dogma outside the church there is no salvation in the years prior to Vatican II which opened the floodgates for the Vatican II apostasy. And that's what so many false traditionalists and false sedevacantists don't understand. Once people started to believe that people could be united to the church without the Catholic faith, that people could be saved in other religions, it was only a matter of time before Vatican II came about. Because then you look upon these people not really as needing to be converted. They're not in darkness. And so, well, maybe these religions aren't that bad. And so it gives rise to it, as we see here. Now, moving on to liberty of conscience. Gregory XVI speaks of this liberty of conscience as the, quote, bottomless pit being opened from which St. John saw smoke ascending. That's how horrible he thinks this error is. And in point 15, he goes on and he says, quote, "Here we must include that harmful and never sufficiently denounced freedom to publish any writings whatever and disseminate them to the people, which some dare to demand and promote with so great a clamor. We are horrified to see what monstrous doctrines and prodigious errors are disseminated far and wide in countless books, pamphlets, and other writings which, though small in weight, are very great in malice." End quote. And so here we have a pope really coming out against heretical teachings, saying that this idea that you can publish and you have the freedom to publish any writings you want, whether it's attacking the divinity of Christ or whatever, is an error. And that follows logically. In an ideal society, people should not have an unlimited freedom to publish things which contribute to evil. And so he condemns this heresy of liberty of the press and liberty of speech. Concerning liberty of speech and why that is a heresy, that also follows logically. In an ideal society, of course, you should not have the freedom to set up shop on a street corner and gives speeches about how great abortion is, or pornography, or drug use, etc. And so he calls liberty of conscience absurd, and he calls liberty of speech and of the press never sufficiently denounced. And he says that this never sufficiently denounced heresy of liberty of speech and the press gives rise to monstrous doctrines. Well, Vatican II teaches exactly the opposite. In Dignitatis Humanae, Vatican II's Declaration on Religious Liberty, the most obvious heresy concerns religious liberty, but there's a much less talked about heresy in number 4, where it says, quote, "In addition, religious communities are entitled to teach and give witness to their faith publicly in speech and writing without hindrance," end quote. Of course, this is related to and tied in with the heresy of religious liberty, but it's sort of another angle to the issue. And it says right here, they are entitled to give witness to their faith publicly in speech and writing without hindrance. So it teaches liberty of speech and liberty of the press, writing, the two things Gregory XVI condemned in his magisterial encyclical Mirari Vos as, quote, never sufficiently denounced and giving rise to that which is monstrous. And that's why we say that when you understand the teaching of the popes, there is no way you cannot conclude, if you have any honesty, that Vatican II is an anti-magisterium. And this is just one encyclical. I mean, we could go through many. It's exactly the opposite, and it actually proves the supernatural protection of the papal office, because the very evils the popes warned about and condemned are the very teachings that the evil counterchurch teaches. Before I move on, there's an interesting quote in point number 16, speaking of this evil. He says that the people who clamor for this liberty of the press, etc., they are even so depraved as to affirm that it is contrary to the principles of law, and they deny the church the right to decree and to maintain it. End quote. So he's speaking of these depraved individuals who fight for this. Well, he could have talked about Vatican II if he were alive today. The next thing I want to move to comes in paragraph 19, where he's talking about certain revolutionary heresies, and he says, quote, "Here surely belong the infamous and wild plans of the Waldensians, the Beghards, the Wycliffeites, and other such sons of Belial, who were the sores and disgrace of the human race. They often received a richly deserved anathema from the Holy See," end quote. This is a tremendous quote, where he's speaking of various sects and their members, the Waldensian heretics, the Beghards, the Wycliffeites, and he calls them sons of Belial, meaning sons of the devil. So he identifies them as evil. He doesn't say, "I can't judge." He says they're of Satan. And he says they received a richly deserved anathema from the Holy See, meaning they're excommunicated and outside the church. There's not one quote that even approaches anything like this from the Vatican II antipopes. It's truly a new religion. But this quote is particularly interesting, because among the sons of Belial that he mentions were the Waldensian heretics. And this is interesting because Benedict XVI, Antipope Benedict XVI, when he was, quote, Cardinal Ratzinger, in his book Pilgrim Fellowship of Faith, and you can find this in the article on this book on our website, VaticanCatholic.com, on page 203, he says this, quote, "We will, of course, be unable to avoid seeing all the series of movements that failed or that led to lasting division. Montanists, Cathars, Waldensians, Hussites, the Reformation movement of the 16th century. And we will probably have to talk about there being faults on both sides that left division here in the end." End quote. So he's speaking of the different Reformation movements and the different groups prior to the Reformation. And he mentions the Waldensians, one of the groups that Gregory XVI described as sons of Belial, who received a richly deserved anathema from the Holy See. And he says that we will have to talk about there being faults on both sides. So it's not their fault for denying Catholicism. Both sides are to blame, he says. That directly contradicts Gregory XVI, who said that their anathema was, quote, richly deserved. Benedict XVI, heretic that he is, does not fault the heretic for leaving the church, but blames both parties. Now, the last thing I want to mention in this encyclical comes in point 22. It's a somewhat interesting statement where he says, quote, "Let them remember that God is the guide to wisdom and the director of the wise. It is impossible to know God without God, who teaches men to know himself by his word." End quote. Gregory XVI says that God teaches men to know himself by his word. So God teaches man to know God. Well, this is interesting because in our material, our video and our article and our magazine dealing with how John Paul II systematically preached that man is God, he would say over and over again, Christ reveals man to man himself. Christ reveals man to man. Whereas Gregory XVI tells us correctly that God teaches man to know God. John Paul II taught that God teaches man to know himself. And this was one of his more subtle ways of teaching that man is God. But the full meaning of what he was saying came out in detail from time to time. For instance, in Antipope John Paul II's homily, February 26, 2000, he said this, quote, speaking of Mount Sinai, "In revealing himself on the mountain and giving his law, God revealed man to man himself," end quote. John Paul II says that by revealing himself on Mount Sinai, God revealed man to man himself. His meaning is clearly that man is God, which he said clearly and explicitly many times, but other times would imply that, for instance, when he said Christ reveals man to man himself. And so Gregory XVI's statement that God teaches man to know God provides an interesting contrast to John Paul II's teaching.